Carmelites are the ancient servants or the mitigated rule. They weren't of the primitive rule of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, but if you want to know more about that, perhaps we can talk about that later. He joined Salamanca at this time and went to this fantastic university, one of the great universities of the world. This is my holiday snap a year or so ago. The cathedral of Salamanca. And that's one of the lecture rooms John studied in. That was the lecture seat, the lector of Luis de Leon. Luis de Leon, a very important friar, Augustinian friar, who edited Teresa of Avila's works when she died. And here in the classroom of Salamanca, he studied philosophy and theology, Theologia Speculativa and Mystica, as well as ethics, astronomy, grammar, logic and music. Astronomy he always loved. He not only wrote about the night, he loved to go out and look at the night sky. And again, when things were difficult, he would go out and often spend the whole night just looking at the stars and planets. And also music. He had a great love of music. There's a lovely story that towards the end of his life, as he's dying in Ubeda, they bring some musicians in to console him, music therapy at the time. And he, after a bit, he tells them to stop, because he says that they're disturbing the better music that he can hear in his head. It's a lovely story. 1567, he was ordained a priest at the age of 25, and due to his love of solitude, quiet, and ascetic life, was seriously considering the most ascetic Catholic religious orders, Carthusian. However, the earthquake hit Salamanca, or Medina, in the shape of Teresa of Avila, that great earthquake, force of nature, came into his life. Teresa at this time was 52, more than twice John's age, and fresh from founding her first convent of the Reform in Avila. She was preparing her second foundation at Medina. The illustrators, I think, have taken a few liberties. Teresa looks young, they look about the same age, so they sort of soften the age difference. But she was not only twice his age, she was a good foot taller than him. He was about 4'10". He was a short guy, but she was quite a strapping lass. So there was not only an age difference, but for the height difference. She used to call him my half a friar. slightly rude. Right? They immediately hit it off. She saw in him the person who would bring her reform to the male branch of the order, and that's what he began doing. They founded the first house of the reform in Turriello, near Avila, and in 1568, the Carmelite father, a provincial, heard the four new friars renounce the mitigated rule of the Carmelites and embrace primitive rule. And John at this time took the name for which he has become known, Juan de la Cruz, John of the Cross. In spring 1569, the status of the foundation was changed to that of priory, the permission to receive novices. And in 1570, the community moved to Mansterra de Abajo, as they were too numerous for the old farmhouse. And here John was named rector of the Colegio de San Cirilo at the new Renaissance University of Alcalá in Madrid in 1571. So John was a bright kid. I mean, at Salamanca, he always got top grades in his that. And to be made a rector of a college, pretty impressive stuff. So he's a very, very bright fellow. In this year, however, Teresa was elected prioress of her old convent, the Encarnacion, in Avila. And this roused quite a bit of controversy. One of the first things she did was to appoint John as confessor to the nuns. He took this up in 1572 and spent the next 5 years living in a workman's hut on the edge of the property. He looks even older then. She looks younger. There they are in an ecstasy at Cinemente in Pastrana. And here he brought his gifts to pastor, confessor, spiritual director, nuns, and including himself, and helped form the new, reform, if you like, the Encarnacion along the new line that Teresa wanted it. As this was happening, however, other darker currents were happening. The new reform was getting stick from the old Carmelites, and I won't go into all the politics of this, but in 1575 a chapter of the whole Carmelite order was held in Italy, and new foundations were forbidden. Teresa was ordered to rest in inverted commas in a convent of her choice, and a general visitor, Padre Tostado, was appointed to Spain, who immediately confronted King Philip and the Apostolic Nuncio, Nicolas Ormanenco. Although the visitor wanted John removed from his post at Avila, the nuns and the Apostolic Nuncio wanted him to stay. It must be said that the chaplain of the Encarnacion was a salaried post, so shop steward, closed shop business going on here, you know, how dare you take our jobs from it. And also, probably in politics, the Carmelite provincial giving old observant convents to Teresa and John's reform. That didn't go down very well either, you know, giving a convent to the reform. So a lot of bad feeling going on. Ormanenco, the Apostolic Nuncio, died very suddenly in 1577 at the young age of 35. And on that night, the mitigated fire didn't hang about. They went to the Encarnacion, kidnapped John, seized him by night, and took him on the 2nd of December blindfold to the mitigated fire at Toledo. And there he was held for 10 months. Under the most terrible conditions. Again, it's almost unbearable to imagine the Christians, some of the Christians were monks, friars, doing this to each other. So those of you who've lived in the community won't find it so hard to understand. I'm afraid to say. His cell was 6 foot by, that's the Encarnacion. There's John's car. And there's Toledo, the great old city, the ancient city of Toledo, where John's ancestors and Teresa's ancestors came from. There's the old Alcazar, the old Muslim fortress on the top of the city there. John in his prison. The 18th century people have made it a little more beautiful. What I love is they use the wonderful 18th century viola da gamba, which picked this heavenly music and sold him. But it was a pretty awful experience. We have the testimonials of the guards and nuns at this time. So this is hearsay, we know what went on. And all the testimonials, it's quite interesting reading the testimonials because they're like the scripture account. They're all slightly different, but from them you can piece together what actually happened. The cell was 6 foot by 10 foot. It had one small window high up, and had no heating, obviously, no cooling in the summer. So it's extremely cold in winter, extremely hot in summer. Each night he was taken to the refectory, and the decisions of the Italian Convention were read to him, and he was asked to renounce the reform. When he refused, he was beaten he was whipped with a scourge. Every member of the community scourged him, some apparently with more vigour than others, and this affected his health. He actually died quite young. He died at the age of 49, and one of the reasons I think his health was so damaged was because of his time of imprisonment. Yet, in the middle of all this, in the disintegration we talked about just now, the symbol emerges, the mandala emerges. ¿A dónde te escondiste? Amado, y me dejaste con tu amigo. Where have you hidden, he writes. Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me moaning? You fled like the stag after wounding me. I went out calling you, and you were gone. And the story is told that when he's in the prison, one night, as it often happens to say, some revellers are coming back home early in the morning. And they start singing these beautiful Italian, beautiful Spanish love songs, the romanzas, Lira, they called them. And it said he heard this Lira in his cell, and then he began his own Lira, his own love poem to God. Donde te escondiste? And this is where he begins his writing career, writing the first line, and also first line of the dark night, one dark night. Fire inflamed by love's urgent longings, I went out to my house being now all at rest. This is also a famous little, it was given off 6 months, it was a change of jailer. It was given for the tape. This is actually tiny. Those of you who came to Avila last year would have seen it. It's only about, it's only a little thing like that. This famous sketch of Christ on the cross. It was the inspiration of Salvador Dali's famous, Christ Saviour of the World. There's the convento as it was. It's now car park. I once tried to find. And there is a tiny little flat, but there's a change in all the colour. There's the old fortress that was a sort of old Muslim fortress. And we think John's prison was one of these rooms up here. It was quite high up. And the piece of the Assumption, using the piece of the Assumption 1578, that the friars were resting after the feast, and it was an extremely hot night. They'd left one of the doors open. He effected his escape, and this is true from John Welsh, through a combination of good fortune, planning, and some mystery. He did the classic Errol Flynn thing. He ripped up his sheets into strips and tied them together and then let himself out of the prison. He found himself in the neighbouring convent garden, which caused him a lot of distress. He didn't know how to get out of there. But he managed to escape and wandered through the streets to the house of this Calcutta. They let him in, and he spent the night there. Next morning, obviously, the fathers came back to find him, but he managed to hide him. And the following day, one of the converso, Mendoza, took him disguised gave him the cloak and dagger, gave him the clothes of a secular priest, and he took him by his side as to labour, Alan Madova. He then was smuggled down to Granada. There he is, escaping. Making his way to the Convento. Here's the beautiful gardens of the Alhambra in Granada, the old Muslim palace. And the Carmelite fathers had built a convento, still in there, in the Alhambra. It's now a 5-star luxury hotel. I've never stayed there, but I've had a cocktail there. And he stayed here for the next few years, and this is where he began. He finished his poetry, he began the commentary of his poetry. So he did quite a lot of writing. Also, he did a lot of bricklaying, therapy, art, occupational therapy. He built an aqueduct to take the water from the palace to the convent vegetable garden. And you can still see that aqueduct. Still up there. In 1588, he was elected Senator of the Reform and Prior of Segovia. Any excuse to show pictures. Some people speculate on connections between John's poetry and Muslim poetry. When John was in Granada, not that long after the fall of Granada, the Christians, there were Sufi mystics in Granada at the time. One scholar in particular, Lupe, I'm just writing a Lupe Lopez Baraz, makes the argument that there is undeniable connection between John's poetry and I've only given you selective accounts. There's an incident where a fire is about to destroy them in the comments. And John, I think I've included this theme of fire. It's terribly important to John. He goes to fight the fire with fire. He goes to praise in front of the fire, and the fire stops. It burns everything else, but not the comments. So that became a. But I don't know what to make of this, because they all attest to this actually happening. A number of them give eyewitness accounts of this. I mean, what mysterious thing, schoolera, hit them. In Segovia, he was delighted with the place. Again, any of you who have come to Avila will know Segovia is a very beautiful place. It's also where he's buried. Again, he built quite a lot of it. Idol. Also, he was near his brother, Francisco. And here he is. Francisco used to come and visit him. And they would often talk about their mother. And here's a beautiful image. Apparently, once they were talking, and she appeared to them as they were as children. Beautiful image that came to them. She was a saint herself. She was a very saintly woman, Catalina, there's no doubt about it. I don't think we would have a John of the Cross if it wasn't for Catalina. However, in this peace that he was experiencing, again the problems arose. I don't know why this kept happening, but the new vicar general of the Discalc, Nicholas Doria, so it's his own order, began to affect changes to the new community, which the older members of the order, John, Uncle Gracian, and Sister Anna de Jesus, all thought were against the spirit of Teresa. Teresa, by this stage, had died in 1582. They opposed Doria, and he staged quite a ferocious counterattack. He wanted John dismissed from the reform. The reform that John started, he wanted him removed from it, and he wanted him to have no privileges within the reform, within the order. John, at this point, even for John, a man of great patience and humility, he was really getting a bit fed up, I think. And he asked to take a group of friars to the Indies, to Mexico, once the Jurors found a new convent in Mexico. However, during this process in 1591, he became quite severely ill and was moved on the orders of the provincial from La Puenuela, where he was well loved, to Úbeda in Andalusia, where he was not greatly known and not greatly loved. Prior, who also didn't get on with John, who incidentally being one of John's novices, so those of you who have novice under your care, be very careful. His former novice, who is now his prior, gave him a very unpleasant cell, refused to give him special treatment. The disease was in the decay of the flesh, a particularly horrible thing. He also, extraordinary, I was reading the accounts last week, he also, and I've forgotten this, refused the bandages that he used on John to be washed. He had to use the same bandages. On 13th of December, John called the prior into his cell and asked forgiveness for the expense he had incurred prior. The prior finally was overcome and fled the cell in tears. And he died later that night. Apparently, one of his last words were, just as they finished the evening office, the Vespers, they said it around in bed, and he was in great pain, and he said, we'll celebrate Matins in the morning. He said, I will celebrate Matins in heaven. One of his last sayings. So he died on the 14th of December 1591. He remained a controversial figure for the next 150 years. It took quite a long time for the beatification and canonization to occur. This didn't occur until 1726. And in fact, just before it occurred, there was an attempt to stop it by several people in Rome, and various charges were made about his doctrine being unchristian. I shouldn't laugh, but in fact, the person who made the charges was then found guilty of heresy. He was put in the prison. Poor man. But anyway, so John was. Doctrine was considered sound, and in fact, in 1926, he was made a doctor of the Universal Church, an honour which he shared with an old co-worker